Big news! The new Sprint LTE Plus network is faster than Verizon and AT&T based on analysis of a recent study by Nielsen. And to celebrate, we're inviting you to join Sprint for the biggest offer in U.S. wireless history. Switch to Sprint and save 50% on most Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile rates. Yep, you heard that right. No gimmicks, no tricks. You have Verizon 6 gigs for $60, 30 with Sprint. And if you have 15 gigs for $100 from AT&T, 50 with Sprint. Even if you have T-Mobile's 10 gigs for $80, we'll give it to you for 40. Oh, and one more thing. We'll even pay your switching fees up to $650 per line so you can switch to the Sprint LTE Plus network today. Visit a Sprint store or sprint.com/save50%.
Offer coverage not available everywhere for discounted phones. Excludes taxes, surcharges, roaming, and premium content. Subject to new line $36 activation fee. Credit valid port in. Plans may not be exact match. See website for eligible plans. Offer ends 1/7/16. Savings through 1/8/18. Exclusions and restrictions apply. Contract liability. Reward card requires online registration.
Blog Talk Radio.
We're all sick and wasted.
Okay, enough of that. There's a message up on my screen. Good morning. Bobby Rodrigo here with I Take Liberty with My Coffee. June 7th, 2015. Happy to be here as always. Want to shine some light on the world, hopefully make it a better place, hopefully help you in your process of trying to make our society better, because we sure need to make our society a better place. There's a note on my screen that says, our engineers are working on a solution for the audiophile issue. In the meantime, a quick fix is to delete your browser cookies and clear the browser cache. Of course, I've done that when I first saw it come up. And, of course, I'm listening to the music for the show, Sick, Tired, and Wasted by the great Eleanor Goldfield and Rooftop Revolutionaries, and I'm hearing all that breakup stuff, so maybe that's what they're talking about. So we'll just get into the show. So good morning, as I said, and I'd like to dedicate the beginning of the show to current events and getting our setup for the whole show done. And, of course, we have two great guests this morning, Manav Mahavish from Mint Press News, mintpressnews.com, Anissa Hodge, activist, radio host, journalist. I was reading some of the comments on the Coffee Party main page event calendar. People were wondering what the banner was that was posted in the room that said, a Muslim and a Catholic wake up in America. Well, that is the show in which Issa Hodge is a host of that he created. Well, the Muslim and a Catholic Wake Up America, him and his co-host, discuss many, many issues. And actually, we'll have a couple of announcements relative to that show later on when Issa is on. But anyway, so good morning. The biggest news of today is, of course, American Pharoah winning the Triple Crown. And mind you, I am a huge sports fan, always have been in my life. But certainly not as big as I was, let's say, like in the 80s or even the 70s, too, I would say. Because, you know, they keep me too busy trying to battle politics. I don't think about sports as much as I usually do. But I did watch the Hawks Lightning game last night. It was very entertaining. Hockey is a gorgeous game, especially if they are not having any stoppages in play and you've got two fast teams. But anyway, so American Pharoah won a Triple Crown. I did watch the race. And it reminded me, especially the way he ran the race, it reminded me of Secretariat, which was the first Triple Crown winner I saw, of course, in 1973. I was 11. And remember very well, my father used to play the horses at the OTB tracks, the OTB in New York. And a matter of fact, I remember he bet on a horse named Onion that actually beat Secretariat in his career. But I remember that race. I remember the big things about Secretariat. Loved the movie. But anyway, so that's dominating the airwaves this morning. Everybody's talking about it. I thought the build-up to it was rather interesting. I get it. You know, I just it's a rich man's sport, of course, which most of them are. And you know, it's okay. You know, it's nice to see something cheered like that. I mean, it's a horse and beautiful horse, and of course, they seem to have figured out how to treat him better, which is nice. But that appears to be the biggest story. Now, there was a couple of other interesting things that happened. A really nice feel-good story that I thought was wonderful. I actually posted it this morning on the Maine Coffee Party Facebook page, and you can read about it on my website. I take liberty with my coffee.com. It is a gentleman started a chain reaction kidney transplant marathon in San Francisco a couple of days ago. I saw the story yesterday. I put it on the page this morning. You know, and we talk about all this mess that we're in all the time, of course. And it is nice to see something positive for a change. And I just wanted to give a shout out to the gentleman that started this. It's really a good story. I have some friends, and so many of us do, of course. It's not like I am, you know, have some special, you know, oh, I'm the only person that's got friends in this thing, so I don't want you to take it that way. But I have some friends, of course, that have been impacted by kidney transplants. I know my niece's goddaughter donated her kidney to her brother. And that was a fantastic story because he was in really bad shape, and it was a marvelous thing. And any time that kind of self-sacrifice. And I have another friend whose wife, actually, to him. And so they kind of keep me both noticing it, and they'll always post updates on the medical. Briefly, one man started a resulting in 9 people receiving the kidney transplants. And one of the nation's first single-city collaboration transplant efforts. Done over a 36-hour period, 18 people from the San Francisco Bay Area are currently being operated on in a marathon surgery to help one another. So actually, this was happening yesterday. The man who kickstarted the reaction comes from California Pacific Medical Center. And he is known as an altruistic donor. He had been wanting to donate his kidney and found the perfect opportunity when a patient in need of a kidney was not a match with their relative. It was because of his kindness that the man inspired this relative to donate their kidney anyway. One person in need, and thus the chain started. Now, you know, it's just fantastic because you think about it. You have 9 people here who are getting a kidney transplant, and no doubt saving their life. Kidney transplants, of course, and of course, anything like this is a risk, of course. But kidney transplants are certainly more common in today's world, and they are certainly helping people. So that was a marvelous thing. So a couple, of, you know, that was a real good feel-good story. And with all the negativity going on in the world, why not start there? I don't do that too often, And we'll move on from that spot. There was a story released yesterday, and I have some comments on it, which is why I'm going to point it out. There was a release of information that George Soros, the philanthropist, the billionaire, had decided to donate or commit to donating, I guess, $5 million to the legal fund in the battles for the voter rights litigation. So I have a couple of comments to make on that, because I read a couple of comments that were made by fellow Coffee Party members et cetera, that I respect, of course. And my problem with the comments was, is that, of course, Coffee Party and my personal position is that I want money out of politics, period. You know, I don't, you know, I get the well, this is a good billionaire against a bad billionaire thing. I get it. And mind you, I am a proponent of the broadest voter rights as opposed to the most restrictive, you know, voting again. Constitutionally speaking, we're blowing it like we are in so many areas, of course. But I don't like advocating satisfaction of having money in politics regardless of what direction it's from, whether I happen to particularly like this particular issue that he is handling or donating to or not. Now, mind you, Soros has a history of being a good man, I guess, if you want to classify that. And I don't have a problem with him helping and doing the things that he does. Not that that matters, whether or not I have a problem with it or not. You know, I suppose Rush Limbaugh's approach to it is that if he has a problem with it, it matters, but that's not my approach. So, you know, and I get it, and I certainly support some of the organizations and the things that he's done as a private individual. My problem is that when it comes to politics, both from the election side, campaign side, and lobbying, I want money completely out, period. Certainly people can donate, but what's going on here is we have billionaire against billionaire battles. You know, we're all familiar with Soros coming out, and this is probably why the Republicans, well, not probably, this is why the Republicans can't stand him more than anything else, and this has been going on for a while with him, you know, because he came out and said, we absolutely have to get George Bush out of the White House now. I certainly agreed with that. I didn't particularly care for John Kerry as the choice, but George was taking us down a road, and Congress was doing it right there with him that, you know, put us into very, very bad places. Obviously, you know, Iraq and the Patriot Act and the recession of 2008 and the job losses and just overall idiocy of an administration, you know, the torture, the violation of human rights that was so extensive, you know, that Dick Cheney's, you know, just trumpets that he would still do, that they still do now under the Obama administration. Drives me crazy. So, you know, I get George Soros, but, you know, I'm sorry. I'm not going to capitulate to my position that money means taken out of politics. You and I need to be dealing with the money in politics issue in a very stern way as fast as we can. And you and I are the ones that should be deciding who is elected in this country and who is not. You know, the media is never going to help us on this, at least not mainstream media, because they make a fortune off of it. You know, and I'm highlighting that. I'm going to highlight the mainstream media too much of this show because of what the subject matter is of the show with my guests, Manar and Issa. So, you know, please understand that voter rights are important in this country, without question. The constitutional protection of them is important in this country. And I applaud the efforts to combat what I also perceive as a narrowing of voter rights, improper voter restrictions. Now, I'll tell you this. I thought of a solution that I think should work. And I'm going to formulate a proposal and put it out there, and let's see what people say. As far as the ultimate compromise in order to get Congress to move forward, and it also to constitutionally protect. And mind you, I'm not a big compromiser when it comes to the Constitution at all. The problem is being compromised too much. That's one of the problems in our society, in my view. You know, I can prove it. You know, the Patriot Act and the NDAA are great examples of that, you know, on how our Constitution has been compromised to such a degree. The lethal force is a first option against unarmed perpetrators or potential suspects or unarmed suspects. The lethal force is a first option. To me, it's a constitutional violation, for example. So my proposal on the voting issue, because what we have here is we have a push to restrict early voting, and to require voter ID. Now, you know, I'm tired of the voter fraud argument. It doesn't exist, period. It doesn't exist on any kind of scale that warrants us to even pay attention to other than what they talk about on talk radio or by our elected officials want to do it or, you know, and yes, the comment that the Republican side of the two-party corporation duopoly thing that's going on in Congress is absolutely using that to its advantage. Absolutely, 100%. I mean, that's what private industry does. They battle each other for an advantage. Well, the Republicans use that as a battle for an advantage against the Democratic corporation. Mind you, the parties are private. Mind you, they're not public. They're just funded by the public. That's how they work. So my proposal is I'll give you all of the voter ID laws you want. Don't care what they are. You can have five pieces of ID to vote. I don't really care when it comes right down to them because it's only going to be a couple of choices anyway. So you can have a government-issued identification as your option for somebody to vote, and in response to that ridiculous requirement, considering that it's not constitutional, in response to that, I say let's start voting a month before Election Day, period. And then none of it's an issue. And there's absolutely no reason why the polls should not be open enough, long enough, for everybody to have an opportunity to vote in every single community in this country. We had 120 million people who did not vote in the last midterm election. Eligible voters. We had just under 100 million people who did not vote in the last presidential election. That is absurd. And without question, much of that has to do with the voter access issue. We should not have lines to vote in today's society. We should make it as easy and accessible as possible. I don't want to hear about voter fraud. I don't want to hear. If we can bank on our phones safely, then we can vote safely in this world and with the security necessary and cut it out. Let's get down to it clearly, people. So, what's Election Day? Election Day is what? November 11th? Let's make voting started at October 11th. Or let's just make it for the entire month of November. I mean, they're not even making it a holiday, but who cares? Let's just vote the entire, when I mean the entire month, I mean 7 days a week. I'm not talking about having Sunday off, Monday off, Pluto day off, whatever day. I'm talking about 30 days of voting, and you can bring out the voter ID laws, and we shouldn't have a problem with another election or another argument about voter right restrictions, about the constitutionality of a process. Let's just open up the polls and let the voters decide what's going to go on in this country. And that solves that problem, in my opinion, anyway. So, moving on. Oh, and the other reason why, just as an add to that, one of the reasons why I thought of this is that if they're going to subject us to a 2-year election cycle every time that we have to vote for, I mean, if you really think about it, it's really a 4-year election cycle because as soon as Obama won the last election, we were already talking about who's going to run the next time for both parties. So the fact that they're just happening to be announcing in the last few months is just, we already knew Jeb Bush was going to be, he hasn't even announced yet. It's amazing. We already knew Hillary Clinton was going to run. You know, Bernie developed. We already knew, I mean, Rick Perry came out of nowhere. We already knew Ben Carson was going to run. Ted Cruz has always talked about it. Rand Paul was not unexpected. It's June of 2015. The election is 18 months away. If they're going to subject me to that long of an election process, they can let me vote for 30 days. I should not be restricted to voting to 1 day, 1 week, or 10 days, or any of that other BS that's going on. They just need to open it up and let me figure it out that way. And that solves all of this discussion. The simplest fix that there can be, and I defy anybody to give me a counterpoint to it other than the fact that it might cost money to do it that way. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's divert money from the campaign and from the primaries that my tax dollars is paying for to making sure that every single state has a 30-day election cycle. How about that? So there's your pushback. There's your answer. Solve the problem. Let's write the law. Let's figure it out. You know, yes, of course, the states have the right to run their own election process. Yes, I know that. I know that. And it's just the same argument. What's the problem? You know, this is how to fix the problem. And I'm about trying to fix problems because that's all we do. I'd rather be on the lake. I say that all the time. But that's what we do. So I want to get my first guest on. And I have to tell you, I am really disappointed in some of the discussions that have had been going on in social media relative to this show and how uneducated people are on what's really going on. And I think back to an example was South Africa. You know, I'm 53 years old, and I was certainly an adult through the apartheid discussion of South Africa. And it was ludicrous. You know, our president of the United States said it didn't exist. The prime minister of Great Britain at the time said it didn't exist. That was absurd. And the businesses that were boycotting South African government and country on the basis of those things were getting ostracized by portions of our society because apartheid didn't exist. And we are here in the information age with a shining light so bright, and we can be lied to such an extreme by our media and fall for it as a society. It blows my mind how easy it comes. The reason alternative media exists is because the media lies. There's no other reason. Yeah, there's some people who want to make money. Absolutely. There are journalists who want to make money. Absolutely. The journalist profession, my profession, one of my professions, is important. And I do not do it full time. I can't afford to yet. But how can you work for an organization that... Great example is Amber Lyon. Perfect example. Colleague, fantastic journalist, did a report, documentary style, on Bahrain and the brutality of our ally. And this is from a 3-time Emmy Award-winning journalist, somebody who's well-respected, thought of. Everybody knows she knows what she's doing. She does the story, and CNN... tanks it on the basis of the truth, and she blows the whistle on them. You know, these are things that you can look up and read and listen to the people talk about it, because of course she's been video interviewed about it. And it just, you know, you just throw it into the can of the absurdity of our media, which, you know, the freedom of the press was set up to keep an eye on our government. That's why freedom of the press protections. It's not a right. The Constitution didn't give us the right. They gave us the protected right. So the reason that protection is in there is because people they cannot do anything to people who expose the government. Great concept. That's not what's going on today. If you can sit there and believe what Sean Hannity is telling you on Fox News, or what Al Sharpton is telling you on MSNBC. And yes, I am naming people here. I don't want to hear it. I can go on and pull Sean Hannity's teeth anytime anybody wants it to. I can pull videos, evidence, oh, this expert and this story. The man lies through his teeth about what goes on in this country and about what the truth is, what the facts are of a certain situation in this country. It doesn't matter what the situation is, he picks and chooses. It's all done with ideological spin. instead of there are times when they tell the facts correctly, but then they slant them. I'm tired of it. And so is the alternative media market. Anti-media, Nick Barnaby's brainchild, the fifth column, Justin King's brainchild, Mint Press News, Manar Mahavish's brainchild, First Look, The Intercept, Glenn Greenwald, Jeremy Scahill, Laura Petraeus, who just won an Oscar for her movie about Snowden. Scahill was nominated for an Oscar for his movie about the secret, the dirty wars of the Obama administration and the Bush administration before that. These things are real, people. And I implore you and beg you to go look for the information and stop listening to the spin left and right that has us divided from factual information. You want to divide about ideological solutions, that's fine. Dividing yourselves on factual information. That's the part that is so frustrating for me. And that's what drives me crazy about today's mainstream media. So as things move along in our world, especially when it comes to the subject of the Middle East, of course, you know, I always look back to, and I'm going to read some things later about this, but I always look back to previous propaganda things. I had for a number of years, I called the society that we were living in the Tokyo Rose Syndrome Society. And for those who don't know, or maybe young or not a World War II historian, Tokyo Rose was somebody who was a propaganda radio announcer. So when our soldiers were fighting in the Pacific Theater, and this happened in Germany as well, in the Pacific Theater, there was a lady on the radio called Tokyo Rose, and she would hammer our soldiers. You know, they would have speakers up and radio broadcasts everywhere, and she was on every channel. And she would tell them how California was attacked and how the generals left and there was a great naval battle and we lost and all these lies, and some of them might have been the truth even, but all these lies in order to break morale. Nothing about what she was saying was the truth. And of course it is, you know, it's torture is what it is. I mean, you're trying, you know, you're far from home, you're far from your loved ones, and you've got this broadcast of what's supposed to be, what, a news story. And of course that was figured out pretty quick. That would get people upset because they think that their loved ones were killed or attacked and back in the United States, in Hawaii or in California or wherever. Or they would, she would talk about what was happening in the European theater and all of these wonderful, wonderful lies. And that's what we're dealing with now. You know, when we got into the 24-hour news cycle and then all these other stations came out and then the promotion of corporate personhood and giving the corporations the protected right to lie because they're people. They have freedom of speech because they're people, because they were born with it. We have taken us down this horrible, horrible rabbit hole. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about the Middle East, and I wanted to talk about the bigotry of the Islam religion and the people, especially in this country, but pretty much everywhere. And that's why I decided to, and of course, like I said earlier, I have an announcement to make with my second guest. But I wanted to do that, and hopefully my first guest, Manar Mahavish, will shed some light on what it is that we're talking about. So as I was mentioning to everybody last week, my intention was to reach out to colleague and somebody who I respect, Manar Mahavish, who is the creator, editor of Mint Press News. And we had been chatting recently about setting up an interview, and I was busy, she was busy, in activism, and then the work that we do both in journalism, and then, of course, being parents, we're both parents, keeps us busy. So finally, she had an incident, a personal incident happened with her family last week that made me reach out to her again, and I want to talk to her about a bunch of subjects, but let me give you a little preamble about the young lady. As I mentioned, she's creator, editor of Mint Press News, founder of Mint Press News, which is one of the wonderful alternative media sources that are available to us now. And we're going to get into what that's about. And she has another project that's getting ready to start as well that I'll let her talk about. We met last year at an event in California, and we have kept the relationship live, interacted both with other activists as well as each other, and I am fortunate to have Mint Press News syndicate some of my articles, post some of the articles on Mint Press News, which is wonderful. And we have a lot of important things to talk about. So without further ado, I want to introduce to the Coffee Party audience, Manar Mohammed. Thank you so much for joining me, Manar. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I want to get right into it. I know that we're pressed for a little bit of time. So I thought that, since the Coffee Party audience doesn't know you as well as others, they do know your work. I'll have to tell you that we have been passing around them in press news articles a lot, of course. But I wanted you to share a little bit about your personal story. I know that that's also important. You've talked about that online as well. And if you would share a little bit about what made you do that, well, about some of the things that were happening to you in younger and some of the things you went through, positive and negative, and what brought you to where you are.
Well, you said it right. Mint Press News is an alternative and independent news organization that focuses on providing coverage through the lens of social justice and human rights. And something that we really focus on specifically is how money affects policies at home and abroad. And when we look at how policies are affected abroad, we tend to look at what drives war, military, industrial. And so that leads me to tell you a little bit about why I started Mint Press. When I was about 9 years old, my parents moved us from suburban Minnesota to Jerusalem, where my parents are originally from. They're Palestinians. And we had the opportunity to live in Palestine and Israel. And at the time, it was a little, it was somewhat peaceful. But within, within a year and a half of living there, the Second Intifada had broken out. And things started to get a little shaky and violent, more than the usual. And now, as many people know, Israel is, the leading colonialist state, the modern-day colonialist state. It's an apartheid state. It's a fascist state. It's a police state. And so being 9 years old, till I was about 12 years old, I had lived under this, in this war zone between the Israelis and Palestinians. And I had witnessed Israel commit war crimes against humanity. I used to go to school with half of my class, Palestinian children, to a Palestinian, of course, who were treated as suspects. And so I witnessed this, this police state, this brutality, but most importantly, I witnessed apartheid. I mean, when we think of apartheid, we don't think as if it still exists, something of the past. In South Africa, but in Israel and Palestine, Israeli apartheid is very prominent. So when I had moved back to the United States in 2001, actually right before 9/11, I had suffered from severe PTSD and anxiety as a 12-year-old teenage, American, and I had turned to the media to follow up. It's really just a horrible mess.
Lunar, I really appreciate you coming on. And lastly, before, I just remembered, talk about your new venture. We've got about 5 minutes. Talk about this new venture that you're doing, if you're ready to. I think you are. What you're getting ready to do at Mint Press? Go right ahead.
I know I've been saying I'm ready to launch it for like 2 months now. But running Mint Press and doing what we do, it's been a lot of work. To get it going. But yeah, I'm working on a new video show, and it's basically an expansion and upgrade of my Mintcast podcast that I was doing last year. And I'm really hoping to visualize and get more interviews and expand kind of what we already do best at Mintcast in covering these issues from the lens of social justice and human rights, and provide more graphics, more visuals, more interviews, and get me also more involved in the journals and making, I work as an editor and I work on the business side of Mint Press. So I really miss being really actively involved in the journalism aspect myself. So I'm hoping to produce these video shows to get myself more engaged with readers. So I'm really excited about it.
Fantastic. Well, all the best for that, and we'll certainly make look out for that and make sure the Coffee Party universe knows about it.
Thank you.
It's a growing large universe, I have to tell you, and we're happy to always talk to Mint Press News. And Minar, I look forward to working with you in the future, talking with you in the future, and thank you so much for coming on, and you have a fantastic week, and again, our best to your parents. Jeez.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
That's not a problem, and you be well, and talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
Yep, thank you, Bobby.
Good morning, Robert.
Okay, I believe that I am back on the air. I just got knocked off. We're having wonderful technical problems this morning. Okay, so hello, everybody, back in Coffee Party land. And I believe I was doing, I was calling in Issa on Skype, maybe that perhaps, and maybe I knocked myself off. I have to take a look into that. Anyway, we are back on the air, and I want to bring in, Issa Hodge.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good
today?
Morning, Issa. How are you?
I'm
fantastic.
Good. I'm enjoying that cup of coffee.
You got some liberty in that coffee, young man?
I always put liberty in my coffee. An extensive amount of liberty.
Fantastic. Issa, I'm going to get right back into it. I just had Minar Mahavish on. I know she's also a mutual friend and activist and in print news, et cetera. And I want to get right into it. You know, first of all, I got to tell everybody a little bit about you and the Coffee Party now, is you are the host of the radio show, creator and host of the radio show, Muslim and the Catholic Wake Up in America. Notice I said that correctly this time.
America.
Say that? See, I didn't say it correctly. So go ahead. America.
America. That's right.
You're going to have to, have me on the show and train me properly. And we're going to be broadcasting your show. Yes, we're going to have you broadcasting live as well on Coffee Party Radio on Tuesday nights. I'm happy to announce we're going to be getting that show set up here directly, and I want to let our audience know about it. And welcome to the Coffee Party Radio world, as they say. We're happy to have you. Certainly,
we're happy to be there.
Wanted to get into our subject matter because, and you know, the first time I ever heard you talk about this subject, you started with 9/11. And I just want you to just give an outline of how you have perceived the media, and we can get the elected officials later, but how you perceive the media's approach to the Muslim community and the religion of Islam, both around 9/11 and since, if you wouldn't mind.
It's quite simple. Prior to 9/11, I mean, you could see through the media that Islam was never in the crosshairs. I mean, the top story of every mainstream media and local media was always an African American had robbed this, or they had stolen this, or they had got caught with this amount of drugs. You know, that was always pretty much the top story all across the country. 9/11 was a catalyst that was the creation of a new enemy, you know, if you would, a new minority for the masses to focus on. And the media, of course, you know, they play two roles in the demonization of Muslims, the villainization of them as well. One, of course, is because since the 80s, the decline of journalism in America, you know, they began to sell out to scripted stories that journalists were not allowed to be objective. They weren't allowed to be unbiased. They weren't allowed to tell both sides of the story and leave the viewers with the duty of deciding for themselves. This was taken away by number one by corporatism, where they would mass buy up all of the print and TV and radio media under conglomerates. This was the beginning in the 80s. But then it was also instrumented through legislation, where journalists began to getting incarcerated and harassed and audited by the IRS for simply protecting their sources and not, you know, especially when they were whistleblowers and things of this nature. So you had journalists. Who had to save their job. I mean, as journalists back then in the 80s, you know, they weren't making, unless you were an anchorman, you weren't making big money. So you had to save whatever jobs you could. And then you had the mass buyouts of all of the independent media that existed back then. I think it's something like five families own over 80% of the media.
Yeah, it's actually six corporations now, and it's 90%. It's actually worse. Study of that. It's horrible. Yeah, absolutely.
And if we look back in the 80s, I mean, I'm old enough, and I think you are too, Robert, but if we look back in the 80s, prior to that, we could turn on one news station, and we'd have one top story there. And then we could turn on another news station, and we'd have another top story. You know, we could watch different things going on in the world, you know, on different news stations. Locally or internationally, for that matter. But now look at it now. Starting with the war on drugs, this is the reason why I say it's a sellout of the journalism in the 80s. Because we have a sellout of the media and the journalists started in the 80s. Start the war on drugs, communism, and then it moves on up into the 90s with still the war on drugs. And then into the 2000s, we have Muslims. But so this is one side of it. Okay? We have a selling out of the media. And then the second part of the media is it's profitable. Kittens playing with ducks don't sell as well as they find some obscure story in some backwoods town in Afghanistan where a 13- or 8-year-old or a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old girl got married to a 40-50-year-old man. Now, see, that sells more because then it helps the population here to feel as if they're superior to those backwoods brown people, barbarians on the other side of the earth. That sells better to them, even though we forget about the Appalachian Mountain. We forget about, you know, all over this country, pedophilia is rampant. 20 Psychology Today says that 20% of the children in this country have been molested.
Yeah, I know that.
Affects 5% of the male population in the world. But yet, apparently, the media wants to say that it's been an Islamic issue. And that's just one aspect of it. I mean, they regurgitate. And if you look over the last 14 years, from 9/11 up to now, they continue to regurgitate the same crap. Even after it's been debunked, they wait a couple of years, and then they start to pump that same garbage out again. We can use, for example, the terror camps. There's apparently all these terror camps all over the United States. And it was this story first broke in 2009. It was debunked in 2009. In 2011,
right.
It came out again. It was debunked again. Okay, and this came out again in 2014. And again, it was debunked. This is the problem that we have with mainstream media. Is they know that the attention span of the average person in America is less than a goldfish. You know, so they
you know, the, you know. You know, a couple of things had come up, and you know, I echo what you're saying totally. You know, the mainstream media and its duplicity and what's going on in our thinking process as a society is absurd from every aspect, and no more so than about Muslim and Islam. Now, of course, you know, the immediate pushback is as well. It was the Muslims who committed the atrocity of 9/11. Well, okay, my pushback to that is that I consider 9/11 a criminal act by people acting criminally, not mm-hmm. anything but that, regardless of the rhetoric. I always thought that, and I was not alone on this, I always thought it was the FBI's job to go after those people, you know, for the horrific thing that happened, regardless of the theories and the United States and all that other stuff. We know Saudi was involved. You know, that is pretty clear, as you know, from a funding standpoint. And I know from inside the Muslim community, that's pretty clear. So what I want to get into some things, because when you mentioned, like, for example, the marriage of an 8-year-old to a 46-year-old person and pedophilia, and that's the problem, isn't it? It's we know it exists. It doesn't just exist with one set of people at these percentages that you mentioned. So either tell the truth about everybody or leave the truth alone about anybody. Because all right. they're doing is dividing us. That's kind of what you're right. saying, isn't it?
Well, of course I am. I mean, if we look at the hard facts, 80% of child pornography comes out of the West. 80% of child pornography comes out of the West. Okay.
Right along with the good.
Exactly. So, you know, you're right. But I think that we as citizens should demand. You know, for me as a Muslim, I've been called an apologist. You know, and I'm not an apologist. You know, I have no problem talking about ISIS. I have no problem talking about child marriage within the Islamic community. I have no problem talking about the fact that Saudi and the Gulf states are funding one faction of ISIS. But at the same time, I'm also going to talk about the fact that America and Britain and Israel are also providing weapons and funding and training for ISIS still to this day, even if they are classified as enemies. So I have no problem talking about the bad faction. But the problem for us Americans, they don't want to face the fact. You look at it like this. We have denigration of scientists, where we don't take anything that they say is true. Look at the global warming, for example. 97% of the world's scientists, environmental scientists, say that global warming is directly caused by humans.
Right.
But yet politicians and the media will argue tooth and nail that it isn't. Now, name one scientist as a politician or one media journalist as a scientist. You're going to argue 97%.
That's one of the pushbacks from the activism world. You know, it's been particularly the left, I'll mention, in this that does a very good job in this, for example, where they say, you know, why aren't there any scientists elected to Congress, for example, and why do they have these people who are placed on the scientific committees, the ones that are involved with funding and legislating the scientific aspects of our society, why don't any of them have a scientific background? On the contrary, like you say, they are deniers. Absolutely.
Well, of course. And we also have the same when it comes to 9/11, for example. I did a lecture at D.C. back in 2013, the Engineers and Architects for Truth on 9/11. Now, we're talking about over 1,000 well-credentialed, well-educated engineers and architects have signed on to say that the official story of 9/11 is garbage, that there's absolutely no way that those three towers could have fallen due to plane impacts, okay? Now, they're not saying who's to blame. They're saying that the official story is wrong, that through ergonomics, through physics, through construction, that they were specifically built to withstand this, that there's no way that could happen. Yet they're looked at as loons by mainstream media. These are scientific professionals in their respective fields, but yet the masses call them conspiracy theorists, even though the very people who constructed, who are demolished, who experts, who are engineers and architects, who built these very same towers, are saying the same thing, that there's no way that these planes could have brought them down. Yet they're still degraded through the media and, of course, the masses, because they're more interested in who's going to win Dancing with the Stars and who's going to make it through Survivor Antarctica, all right? Then they are listening to people who have more knowledge in this particular field. And this has been started in the 80s and has progressed up to this point. And this is why I don't really typically get into the New World Order and, you know, and all of this stuff, even though it's exactly what it looks like, because if you look at all the facets in order to create a one-world government, I mean, through education, through media manipulation, through financial control, you know, through all of these different aspects, you can see how we are developing into this one-world order, this one-world control, this one government.
Control is the key. Control is the key.
Yeah. Exactly.
If you, when you, so when you, from the standpoint of financial, and from the standpoint of financial, and you, from the standpoint of the influential people, the media being owned by six companies, for example, I think the controlling aspect may show that more than anything else at this time. If the, if the New World Order theory is true, you know, and I'll put it that way, if it is true, it is the control that shows it more than anything, I think.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, I like I said, I don't really get into too much of that theory. No, I don't want to use the word conspiracy theory, because they have muddied that word. They have demonized that word. And it's not a bad word. I don't get why people think that being a conspiracy theorist, because there has to be some conspiracy for you to theorize that something they're doing or saying is wrong. There has to be something there.
If we were educating ourselves with in other ways besides doing standardized tests all the time, people may know that. Remember that.
Exactly.
Talking about
exactly. But you know, I mean, but it's easier. It's all about. I mean, it's complacency and laziness. I take, for example, when you were promoting the show with Menar and myself. And I saw some of the comments from people who actually listen to the show, saying that, oh, well, now you've got these Muslim apologists, I'm gone. I'm no longer going to listen. This is getting out of hand. I see this creeping into from the extreme right, which is where it started in 9/11. And we're going back to your original question here, you know, with the progression from 9/11 up to now. I see it going from the extreme right. Because if you remember in the hours after, the days, the weeks, even a couple of years after 9/11, you still had some of your middle ground media and even your far left media, CNN, MSNBC, that were still putting out their truth about things. They were still playing tapes of witnesses, firefighters, and police officers who were saying that they heard explosions. In the towers, for example.
Right.
They were still playing some of the stuff about the five Israelis dancing on the New Jersey side in a van that had a painting of the World Trade Center with a plane impaling them and video recording the event as it happened in Tower 1 and Tower 2. They were still talking about this. You only had right-wing media like Fox News, for example. That was playing ball. But then as it progressed, it started to creep into the middle. And it's now starting to creep into the left. We look at Bill Maher. And we look at the atheist buddy of his, Ben Affleck just went off on this. I can't think of his name right now. I'm sorry. I'm drawing a blank on it. But even Bill Maher, who's considered an extreme left liberal, has jumped on the bandwagon. Why? Because the fact is,
well,
that
let's talk about that, because that's a subject that's near and dear to my, and I have discussed it, and I am, you know, annoyed to no end at Bill Maher, and I'm actually, you know, there are times when I like Maher, you know, and I think he is an intelligent man to some degree, but he is on board the media train when it comes to certain subjects. For example, I just caught him, you know, when his blind love of the Democratic Party as, you know, as a lesser of two evils, you know, ignoring the money in politics aspect of things, for example. You know, the two-party duopoly is absurd in what's going on, in my view anyway. There's no way that there's not money in politics on the left as there is money in politics on the right. Now, the issue with Muslims, so let's just address some of the things. Of course, I read a really Will Brown, another colleague of ours from the Common Ground Movement, posted something recently that I had forgotten about, and it was a passage in Deuteronomy that literally says, if you don't love our God, you are supposed to kill people. And I had forgotten that that exists. One of Mars' big issues is that in the Islam religion, it says that if you don't stay in the Islam religion, you're going to get killed, that you're supposed to kill. And if you're not a member of Islam, you're supposed to kill you. So let's talk about that directly, because so those are some of the questions and the arguments that go on in the wonderful society that we have based upon misinformation. So what say you, Issa?
Well, I mean, these are good discussions to have. See, I don't mind discussing with people the similarities between Islam and Christianity, or discussing those things that by today's societal standards may seem archaic or different or contrary to our society here in America. But a healthy debate, a healthy discussion where both sides are presented is way better than what we have going on right now. I mean, when I was on Fox News on Judge Jeannie Pirro a couple of years ago, she literally cut my mic off in the middle of me speaking. She cut my mic off because I wasn't saying what they wanted to hear, and it was contrary to what they were presenting. But I've seen this happen to a lot of people, that they do the same thing to them. But as far as that,
I won't do that to you.
I appreciate that. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. But as far as that's concerned, you have to understand there's historical context that goes with both the Bible and the Quran, okay? There's historical context. There are things that were put into place during that time of the prophet that changed over time. So when this scary word Sharia that everybody's so afraid of, but they don't understand it's not a rigid plank of wood that stays the same. It is flexible. It bends with the time. So if we take, for example, what you brought up, or we take a marriage of what we deem as children today, these are prime examples of how Sharia actually bends and flows. Tolerance is taught throughout the entire Quran. There is a verse within the Quran that God is speaking directly to the Arabs. And he says to them, do not be arrogant because I chose to send this message to you in your language. For this message is for all of mankind. And there will be Christians and Jews in heaven. And I am the best of judges. And I, over and over and over again, God tells us in the Quran that Christians and Jews are the closest to us in faith. They are our brethren. They are, okay? This is repeatedly. When it talks about those that are not of the faith, he's talking about pagans, and it is historically contextual to that day, during the time of the prophet when he came up, 1,426 years ago, there were pagans that ruled Mecca. They worshipped some over 340 different gods, and they all worshipped right there at the Kaaba, which is for us as Muslims, we believe is the house that Abraham and his son Isaac and Ishmael and built. Okay, so whenever when the first message was brought, there was no violence. There was no defense. See, because that's the only time violence is permissible in Islam is in defense. But when Islam was first brought, when the prophet first announced his prophethood, they were not allowed to defend themselves. They were only allowed to speak truth to lie. Okay? He first came, the first thing he did was give women their rights, because at that time they had no rights. They were only allowed to be traded and sold at will like cattle. But he established women's inheritance rights, established their marriage rights within the husband and wife relationship. He also established the orphan's rights, their rights to inheritance, their rights to life. He established the rights of poor people, that it is the obligation of those that God gives money to provide for those people who God has without giving money to. The same can be said for this pedophilia, which continues to come up over and over and over again. If we look back over 1,400 years ago, let's not even look back 1,400 years ago. Let's just look in our own country 100 years ago. It was nothing for a girl by our standards today to be married to a man. The life expectancy back then was less than it is today.
I offer Loretta Lynn as an example. Loretta Lynn was married. Loretta Lynn was a godmother. I mean, godmother, grandmother when she was 30 years old, 29 years old, for example. So it's not even 100 years. It's not even 100 years.
Right. I mean, we could also go to Jerry Lee Lewis, who married his 13-year-old first cousin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There you go.
Look, I mean, so today's standards, they sit there and say that, oh, well, your prophet is a pedophile. That's what they say about Muhammad. They say that your religion says that it's okay. Well, actually, if you look in the Bible, look nowhere, absolutely nowhere in the Old Testament, New Testament, does it say that you cannot marry a child.
Cannot marry a child.
Not one place does it say that in the Bible. But in the Quran, it does say that you cannot marry a child. It says that they have to be an adult. It says that you have to have the permission of both sets of parents before two people can get married. Back then, it was not that King Henry VIII married a child. St. Augustine married a child. If we look at all the cultures, Jewish, Christian, Hindu, Buddhist, Islamic, whatever, over 1,400 years ago, it was nothing by today's standards. When we look at and judge 100 years ago, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 1,500 years ago, whatever, we judge today's standards of what a child is and what an adult is, then what they did was pedophilia. Okay, but children didn't grow up the same back then that they do now. By the age of 8 or 9, a woman and a man is working. They're not in sixth grade, okay? They're working. They're taking care of children. They're cooking. They're building houses. They're providing income. Okay. So the societal structure 100 years ago, 500, 1500 years ago is different than our societal structure of today. We have milestones in the progression into adulthood that we have developed over 239 years of our existence. Okay? We have developed this.
We have developed
these milestones.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you just look at the age of the people who fought in the Civil War, for example, it is glaring as to how many young men were involved. So let's talk. So I understand. And mind you, I'll point this out. And, of course, I don't consider myself an expert on religious anything, but I certainly know certain things. I've read many things, including the New Testament and the first, I don't know, 8 books of the Old Testament. I think I did it in one sitting. I don't remember sleeping. But, for example, you mentioned the pagan god. Yeah, right. So you mentioned the pagan gods. Well, that's what the Ten Commandments partially was about. Certainly the first 3 commandments was about the love of the God, our Father. And it had to do with the pagan love, and we know the story. Yeah, we know the story about the pagan worship of even the Jewish community, and the wrath, and of course Moses breaking the Ten Commandments on the first time he received them because he saw all the worshiping of the idols and things like that. So that is the same as what you were describing. So I wanted to point that out, but let me move on to another aspect, because I hope everybody listened to what you said, because what you said was very important as to both historical context and for what actually is said. Let's move on to the women aspect of it. You know, as far as I'm concerned, women should have killed all the men on the earth a long time ago.
Before we get to that, emphasize one other point on that last topic. I want to emphasize that. You have to understand, in order to understand any religious text, any, I don't care what faith it is. I have been a Muslim for 21 years. I chose to be a Muslim at the age of 19. So that tells you guys, your listeners, how old I am. Okay, I have studied sitting behind me. If you could have this camera on, you could see my extensive library of all the religions that I have studied. Everything that has an ism behind it, Catholicism, Judaism, you know, I've studied Mormonism, I've studied Scientology, I've studied every religion. So you have to be able to, when you study a religion, you have to judge the religion by what is in its book, not by the people who profess to practice it. Because if that was the case, every Catholic is a pedophile, every white Christian is a Klan member, all right, or a Nazi.
All right, or a Nazi.
All right. So, right. So there are, and of course, every Jew is greedy. All right. All right. So we have
all
to judge
of, all
religion.
Of the isms, as they say. Right.
Exactly. So we have to judge the religion by the what's in its book, not by the people who profess to practice it. But when you go to do that, you cannot cherry pick. Because I have done this, and I have written articles on this on my website, www.wakeupinmerica.com. I have written papers on this, where I have taken different Bibles and different religions, and I have made it look good by cherry-picking, and I have made it look bad by cherry-picking. So you cannot cherry-pick a religion. You have to study the verses before it, and the verses after it to get full context and meaning of what it is that is being talked about at that particular moment. This gives you the background. So when it talks about killing the infidel, okay, this was a very specific order given at that specific time because the pagans were the infidels, not Christians, not Jews, not the pagans that were considered the infidels. And they were trying to kill the Muslims. And so this order was given to them that it was okay for them to defend themselves at this particular moment. Because when he left Mecca and he went to Medina,
I said yes. I mean, I'm very familiar with that, and I know that it's the truth, and it's one of the things that annoys me to no end.
I was saying this to the listener.
Yeah.
I was saying this to the listener.
No, no, I know that. I know that. And I think that one of the problems that we have here is we have Pat Robertson and we have, you know, Sean Hannity and we have whatever other religious expert out there, alleged expert, and in the community, and then we have Lindsey Graham, another expert, you know, and all these people telling us how to think. And of course, that's on the left. Don't get me wrong. It's not just the right. It's the left. Everybody is out there telling us how to think, and we're just, you know, you mentioned all those shows. I really have to attack you, Asa, because you didn't mention American Idol, and they are the champions. You know, you got to give everybody equal time here.
Sorry about that.
They're a champ.
I use that one so often, I figured I'd switch it up a little bit. Yeah, I'm sorry. But
let's
a Honey Boo Boo one next time.
There you go. So let's cover. We got about 15 minutes left. Let's cover women as well. That is another big issue and a discussion. And some of the pushback that I got for doing this show was talking about women. You know, typical comment, you know, having a woman walk behind you, fully covered while the man walks down the street, et cetera. And then, of course, there's the Arab Emirates. And then there's 1.6 million Muslims. And then there's, of course, Muslim country was the first one to have a woman in as a leader of the country in the history of the world.
Actually eight.
All of these things that are
actually, yeah, it's actually eight countries, Islamic countries now, because they just recently in a small African country just elected a Muslim president. So it's now eight females elected as head of state. And in fact, this country that she was elected in, there's only 17.6 Muslims in that country. But yet this woman is a scientist, she's a biologist, she's a PhD holder in several sciences. She's written 25 books. She has invented several different eco-friendly systems. This woman is genius, and she's Muslim. So she's the eighth female to be elected as a president. Even Prophet Muhammad, one of his wives, Aisha, the one that we call the mother of Islam, but everybody calls the poor little girl that was pedophiled by the Prophet. And I have to say, astaghfirullah on that one. But this is what they say. She was also the leader of armies. We call her the mother of Islam because she lived with the Prophet. She memorized the Quran. She taught the Quran to people and taught them to memorize it after the Prophet died. She led battles. She was a general in battle after the Prophet had died. Yet she was a woman. We talk about this walking behind and this coverage. What is ordered by the Quran is modesty. And it's not just ordered for women. It is ordered for men as well. We are told to lower our gaze so that we're not to objectify the opposite sex. We are to continue to be modest. Men have to keep themselves covered from the navel to below the knee. All right? Nobody, not another man or woman, other than our wives are allowed to see from the what's below, what's in between the navel and the knee. For, and this is our ornament, as the as translation of the Arabic word goes. For women, it is their hair, their breasts, their thighs, their butt. They have a lot more ornaments than men do, okay? So they have to cover them. The burqa is a cultural thing. It is only 7% of 1.7 billion Muslims. 7% of those women that actually wear burqa is cultural. This is the full muumuu outfit, as I like to call it, all right? Where they wear the niqab, which is the face covering. The burqa is the big muumuu dress they wear. If you took every single Muslim woman in the world and you had a football field big enough to put them in, and you were told to throw a football at a woman wearing burqa, it'd be almost impossible because there's so few of them that actually do this. It is a cultural thing. But the ironic thing is this, that most people in the media does not talk about. Our faith is not the only one. Hasidic Jews have the exact same looking outfit.
Yes,
there's
it does.
This stupid meme that's going around where it shows these little girls dressed in these full burqa, these full niqab, although they don't call it that, they call it something else. But they're wearing the exact same outfit, and they're in chains. Now, this meme that's going around, is they say that this is Muslims that are doing this and taking little girls to sell at a meat market, basically. And in fact, it is a religious rite from the Hasidic Jews. So it's not actually so. It's not, so why is it that Catholics, nuns can wear the head covering, and it's looked at as modesty, chaste, and religious? But if a Muslim woman wears it, she's
well. The pushback to that would be because the women have entered into an aspect of the religion that's not involving the normal society. You know, I know you know that the nuns and priests are but a part of the Catholic community, whereas, you know, your partner on your show, or I was raised a Catholic, for example. I don't consider myself one now, but I was raised a Catholic. So, you know, like my mother was not a nun, so she didn't have the habit in her thing. So that's the pushback of that in comparison.
Right.
But I wanted you to emphasize what you're talking about, because, again, it's the truth that is not being told and how it is demonized.
Correct.
And then you gave a
great
example of the Hasidic Jews, of course. They
absolutely even here in America, in upstate New York, it's called Jewtown. It's a bad name for it, but it's Hasidic Jews, where they have made it illegal for women to drive. So we have a little
right.
mini Saudi Arabia right here in upstate New York, where women are not allowed to drive. It's not Muslims, it's Jews. But this, of course, doesn't hit mainstream media. And this goes down to basically to all those people that were listeners before that may be listening now just because their curiosity is piqued, but they mentioned that they were no longer going to listen to your show anymore. But this is the problem, is that you're falling victim to the divide and conquer tactic where Robert has decided to allow Manar myself to come on his show and speak truth to lies. And you have an opportunity to listen to the other side and then maybe even do a little bit of research on your own afterwards and then make your own decision. But, you know, as I tell everybody, you don't have to like my faith. Okay? I don't care. If you like my faith, you may choose to say, I don't agree with your faith, I'm going to stick with my faith, and that is your God-given
right.
But at the same time, you're going to respect my choice of faith, as I'm going to respect yours, because the First Amendment
exactly, and the pride, absolutely, it protects us in this country, it protects us, and that, again, is very, very important. And you raised something that I want to cover real quick. We got a couple of minutes on this.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other divisive things that we get in our political and media structure is that, you know, the left is soft on Muslims and the right is
mm-hmm.
telling the truth about it. I find neither side telling the truth about it myself, and I find the place where Muslims are treated honestly more so than any other is in the Liberty Forum. Now, I'm not saying libertarian, so I would say that that's better. But I mean, just for people who are liberty-minded and who believe the Constitution is being, you know, used as toilet paper, like I do. And I wanted to get your comments on that.
Well, you know, you're right. In the middle is where I tend to find the most allies. Because unfortunately, that's what it's boiled down to for us as Muslims in America, is we have allies and we have enemies. But we, and we shouldn't have to be this way. But the sad thing is that this disease of villainizing Islam and Muslims is creeping into the liberty movement as well. I have seen it. Even Rand Paul, you know, who champions himself as a libertarian Republican, who fell, if you're a Rand Paul fan, people, but he has fallen far from his father's tree. I just want to say that.
You said, do you know my name for Rand Paul? I have to jump in. Do you know my name for Rand Paul? I don't know if I've ever told you this. About 2 years ago, I came up with a nickname for Rand Paul. The nickname is Trick Liberty. That's my name for Rand.
Trick Liberty. I like that.
Trick Liberty.
No, I like that.
Trick Liberty. Yes, sir.
Yeah,
that's Rand Paul. Yeah. Trick Liberty. Has been since I heard him open his mouth 2 years ago. So, go on. I'm sorry. I had to jump in.
That actually fits in quite well, because 1 minute he's standing up to stop the Patriot Act, and the next minute he's voting for the Freedom Act.
Yep.
What a trick.
Thank you.
That's perfect. You coined that 2 years ago. I like that. But, we find the most allies within the liberty movement, but it is the disease that's coming in. And this brings me to what I see. My minor in college was history, and my favorite portion is American history, because it's amazing in 239 years what we have accomplished, but also at the same time what atrocities we have committed in such a short amount of time, because we have both power and speech with this country. But what I have noticed in my studies of history is that we go through a cycle of violence. And there's three phases in this cycle of violence when it concerns the minorities of this country. If we go all the way back to Native Americans, the African slaves, the Chinese during the railroad. We look at the African American up to this day. We look at the Irish during the Civil War. We look at the Catholics in the 1700s, 1800s. We look at the Japanese during 1942. And the Italians in the 40s, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. What you have is these three phases. Phase one is always fear-mongering propaganda through any means that they have. Back then it was a paper leaflets and booklets, and today it's Twitter and Fox News 24 hours a day. Second phase, that continues into the second and third phase, by the way, this fear-mongering, this false propaganda, these lies continue through all three phases. But phase two brings about isolated incidences of violence, usually caused by those that are weaker of the mind, more susceptible to suggestions, or are a bit off in the head, if you would, if they have mental disorders. But then phase three is the most problematic one that we see happening over and over and over again. And phase three is where it becomes socially and legally acceptable to cause harm, violence towards that minority. And it's typically hundreds of years later that the American population go, maybe we shouldn't have done that.
The apologies come.
It took all the way to Bill Clinton to apologize, the first president to apologize for slavery. It took Ronald Reagan giving $500 to all the Japanese internment camp people who lost everything. Okay? I mean, it took Ronald Reagan in 1985 to do that. I've had no apology for the Irish slaves during the creation of our country. Most people don't know that there were Irish slaves.
Yes, there were.
Those continuing to lie about the Civil War, that there were more Americans killed in Civil War than all the wars combined, that's a flat-out lie, because the North used the Irish and the South used the black African slaves. All right? As on the front line. The bulk of the people that died in the Civil War were not American citizens. They were actually foreigners. So basically what we have is we have a culture, we have a country that tends to like to have lies with their coffee, not actual liberty with their coffee. you know, because they, you know.
I'm trying to change that. That's a great way to wrap that up. I love that.
You're welcome.
Stop having lies with your coffee. Come have some liberty. I love it. I'm gonna have to work on that. I like that a lot. Definitely. Absolutely. Issa, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it always. It's always great talking to you. You're gonna be on Coffee Party Radio on Tuesday nights. I'm looking forward to that as well.
Can I plug myself here?
Of course, go ahead.
If you're interested in commenting or questioning or asking questions or interrogating me, you can contact me through my website as well. All our past shows of Muslim and Catholic of America are on this website, as well as all my articles, as well as all my interviews on Fox News and MSNBC, and also a lot of my lectures that I've given over the years as well. You'll find at www.wakeupinmerica.com. And I hope to see you guys over there.
Fantastic. And always a pleasure to have you and interact with you, Issa. And, of course, I'm looking forward to working with you in the future. You have a great day and great rest of the week.
You do the same, buddy.
Take care.
All right, you too. Bye. All right, you too. Bye.
All right, so that's another show of I Take Liberty with My Coffee. Appreciate all the listeners and participating today. And next week we're going to be doing another show relative to how the media covers another country or a country and another ethnicity in this country, the people of Poland and the Polish country, and revolving around when it was occupied by Germany and then when the death camps were in Poland in World War II, and how the media has lied about it and how it refuses to change its mind about it, and the history behind it. Thank you so much for being a part of my Sunday morning. Remember, Coffee Party Radio, Saturday, 1 o'clock, Egberto Whittley's. Thursday at 12 Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern Time, Lunch with Loudon. Friday night at 9 o'clock, The Medium Ground, which will start this Friday night. Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock will be A Muslim and a Catholic Wake Up in America. I'm never going to get that accent down. And on my show every Sunday morning, 8:30. Look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you so much for being part of the show this morning.
Big news! The new Sprint LTE Plus network is faster than Verizon and AT&T based on analysis of a recent study by Nielsen. And to celebrate, we're inviting you to join Sprint for the biggest offer in U.S. wireless history. Switch to Sprint and save 50% on most Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile rates. Yep, you heard that right. No gimmicks, no tricks. You have Verizon 6 gigs for $60, 30 with Sprint. And if you have 15 gigs for $100 from AT&T, 50 with Sprint. Even if you have T-Mobile's 10 gigs for $80, we'll give it to you for $40. Oh, and one more thing. We'll even pay your switching fees up to $650 per line so you can switch to the Sprint LTE Plus network today. Visit a Sprint store or sprint.com/save50%.
Offer coverage not available everywhere for discounted phones. Excludes taxes, surcharges, roaming, and premium content. Subject to new line $36 activation fee. Credit valid port in. Plans may not be exact match. See website for eligible plans. Offer ends 1/7/16. Savings through 1/8/18. Exclusions and restrictions apply. Contract by or via reward card requires online registration.